Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. Episode 13, Harford. The scent of family marked Harford and her father deeper than any bloodwood sap. She breathed it in, burying her nose deep into his fur. He smelled of their hollow and the roots of the blood apple. He smelled of the stars that glinted through the bloodwood's branches. Father and daughter stood by the evenside green gate. It would be many moons before she saw him again. Maybe years. The headmarked rarely left the king's bloodwood. Highwood would be her home now. She would have to grow her roots here and, when her time came, bind her bones to the mountain, far away from the bones of her father. There were God's song that said the desert would scrub them clean of their memories after they died, that everyone enters the forest of the gods like a newborn, mewling and without any idea of who they were before. She hoped that wasn't true. If he entered the forest before her, she would sing for him every day. She would dance the songs of the High Fox of Applewood so he would not forget who he had been in life. And then, maybe, he would not forget her either. "He's not gone yet," she told herself. He was right there in front of her, his presence still strong on her scentscape like fruit after windfall. She did her best to ignore the sour stain beneath it all, hidden under his skin like a worm in apple. "You must send me a song when you arrive," she sighed. "I want to know you've made it safely home." He heaved a hum of comfort. "You worry too much," he sighed. Next was her brother. The two foxes pressed their heads into each other's shoulders, drinking in the sense of their shared childhood, their games in the lone tree field, their fights over the last crop of apples, those times she was too afraid to sleep and he lay his body down next to hers, showing her what was real and what was not. Now they would be apart. Breakcover was leaving her to travel back with her father to Applewood, and she would remain in Highwood. He had been her foundation. Now he was leaving her adrift. His worry set her shivering like cold air in summer. "I could stay," he sighed. "Father's well. I could wait with you until you are settled. Return in autumn." Harford snorted him away playfully. "I fear for my brother, and my brother fears for me. I do." He was serious. Harford composed herself. "Father believes in me. I believe in you. But you don't trust me. This is not Applewood," he sighed. "The animals here do not know you. They may not know how to care for you." "You think I need caring for?" A pause. "Yes." Harford turned away, but his sign words stung like wasps. She did not want to see what he had to say. She did not want to know how he felt about leaving her. Her father trusted her. Her father knew she could be strong. He was Lord of Highwood. His opinion was life and death in their bloodwood. But her brother's words bit deep and hard. She couldn't look at him to see more. The rest of Applewood was gathered around the entrance to the Green Gate. They had travelled there while it was still dark, hoping to make their way through the tree wall and across the Greatlands to arrive at their Smallwood refuge before nightfall. The forest around them was still dark, despite the lightning sky. Cold mountain loomed above them, outlined against the fire of sunrise like some terrible god, but the shadow of its jagged peak still shrouded the Highwood, covering the forest with the early morning chill of a cloudless sky. Break cover walked into his sister's line of sight. "It was not an insult," he signed Ernest, his brow furrowed like soil prepared for planting. "And yet it was," she signed, and every touch echoed the sting as she marked out the words against her body. "I'm sorry." She pulled in his scent again, forcing her own heart to beat with his. "I know," she signed. "I will be fine. More than fine. I'm happy. This is a new start for me. Applewood's my home, but I've always felt more like a rumour there. Animals think they know me before they know me. They know about my condition, and they make up their minds that I'm mad, but I'm not mad. I do not mean that. You do not mean it in malice. But we do not have much time left before you leave. Let us be honest with one another. You may not have meant it unkindly, but you feel it. It is out of love, maybe, but you feel it. You feel I am mad." "I would never say that." "Of course, and you'd never allow another to say it either. I remember what you did to that rat last summer. It should have got itself a blood mark before it started signing about you. You love me. I know that. But it was because of that truth that I would hate us to part on a lie." Breakford hung his head. By the green gate, the creatures of Applewood stood waiting, scratching at the ground or chasing each other in play while their father in his shoulders worked through the final formalities with those high-marked creatures who had seen him to the tree wall. Harfoot thought of the Three Horns' daughter, the young deer who had taken her to meet the Greenmasons of Highwood the previous evening and disappeared to leave her to find her way back to her new resting place alone. It had been nice to have made a friend so quickly, especially one whose status meant they could share with each other the pressures of their headmarked lives so easily. She scanned the scentscape for a presence, but the cacophony of bodies made it impossible. Harfoot nudged her brother's attention. "You have always been there for me when I have needed you. Always. I love you for that. You are strong and brave, and I am not afraid when I am with you. We shared a womb together, brother. And even then you wrapped yourself around me so I would be safe. Thank you. But now things are changing. You've always loved me despite my condition. Now I hope that through my work here you can grow to love me because of it. You cannot expect them to accept you as I have done. And you cannot expect them not to," she replied. "There are good creatures here, Breakcover. The Three Horns' daughter brought me to visit the tree wall yesterday. She was kind and generous with her time. And the Greenmasons I met were intelligent and knowledgeable and never made one comment about my paws or let slip one thing that they had heard about the mad daughter of Applewood."
"Not while you were watching."
"And why should we presume anything they said while I was not? Why assume the worst? Why not believe they were as kind to me behind my back as they were to my face?"
"That's not how it works."
"Well, it should be," she signed. "It should be, and it can be, as long as we believe that it can." Breakcover snorted. Harford jawed him gently on the nose. "If we cannot imagine a better world, then how can we ever create one?"
"We're not creating a better world."
"Then what are we doing?"
"Surviving."
"And what if that is not enough?" The brother fox turned away. Animals by the green gate were watching, impatient. Harford skipped in front of him again. "I can do good here," she signed. "The Greenmasons of the tree wall showed me how they wrap the blood oak's roots to the roots of the tree wall. They showed me how the two can grow together, despite the distance between them. I believe I can bind Highwood to Applewood and Applewood to Highwood and the both of them to every other bloodwood in the kingdom. You have heard Blueheart's gift. You know the bloodwoods are stronger together than apart. You know how Greypaw's madness pulled them apart, and you know how the Three Horn is working to bring us back together. He needs me for that. Applewood needs me for that. I can help our roots grow strong."
"I should go."
"No."
"So you do want me to stay?"
"No, I mean, I don't want you to go without giving me your blessing."
"Then I'll stay."
"Breakcover, please. I'm asking for you to believe in me. I'm asking for you to trust me.
I do.
Then show me. Give me your blessing, brother. Show me you believe I can do this.
The brother fox stood still.
Your blessing, signed Harford.
Every Applewood creature was watching them now. All conversation had stopped. Even their father had turned from his business to see. Breakcover saw them watching. He raised his paw and touched her mark. The Applewood creatures drifted back to their procrastinations. I would never have denied you, he signed.
I know.
I doubt the tree horn would be able to either. Harford gently yowled her embarrassment.
He may be a tougher nut to crack.
No, he signed with gentle grunt. With you representing Applewood, he doesn't stand a chance.
The brother fox touched his mark in formal parting.
Harford returned the gesture, then he was gone, trotting back to the Applewood throng to meet with their father. A few heartbeats later, and the crowd began filing its way through the Green Gate, one group at a time. Each group was headed by a Highwood guide who had led them through the maze of woven branches, safely navigating its traps until they emerged from the tree wall on the other side to begin their journey across the Greatlands. Tonight, they would shelter in Smallwood. At dawn, they would continue on to Southwood, where they would skirt its northern border for 2 days before turning north again to reach the southern tip of Applewood. Then they'd be home. And Harford would not. She watched her father disappear with the first group into the Green Gate. Her brother's group was last. He looked her way before he went inside. And then it was done. The Bloodwood was finally clear of its visitors. The only remnant of Applewood was the five foxes who were staying with her in Highwood. Her father's request for her to stay and represent the Bloodwood in place of her brother had come as a surprise to all of them. Her own Hindmark creatures had left with the rest of Applewood. She could have forced them to stay, but it seemed cruel and pointless. Highwood had green masons of its own, and her personal guard had families to return to in Applewood. The animals staying behind were all her brothers. They had prepared themselves for their new lives, each one of them making the journey knowing they did not intend to return. Though they thought they were coming to serve Breakcover, not his sister. As close as the siblings were, their intimacy did not always stretch to their hindmarked followers. She barely even knew their names. A fox with a grey head and thin, sharp tail approached and held its paw against his mark.
Rockhead, signed Harford, recognising her brother's heart-marked guard. I'm glad you've stayed. My brother trusted you with his life. I hope I can do the same.
Rockhart, signed the grey-headed fox without a heartbeat of hesitation, correcting Harford with sign words that were smooth and easy from years of dealing with her brother.
Shall we return to the dell?
Harford apologised for misnaming the fox, though her thoughts were already elsewhere. She could feel her Bloodwood disappearing from the scentscape. The ghost of her brother was fading, her father's scent drifting from the air like mist in the morning. Soon it would be gone entirely. The scent of Applewood would only remain on Harford herself for a few moons, and then even that would vanish, replaced by the same Highwood smell that even now stained every colour of her scentscape like mud and water.
No, she signed. We will not yet go back to the dell. I have just said goodbye, and I do not want to be reminded of their absence in that place just yet.
We could reach Farclaw Citadel by noon.
Harford considered it.
The Threehorn would be at the Citadel, renewing blood marks and receiving the loyalty pledges of the forest's myriad denizens. The place would be heaving with animals queuing for their chance to receive the king's sap-soaked hoof onto their skin. She'd seen enough of that the day she had received her mark, watching the crowds as she waited for the sap to dry on her forehead. The eerie glow of the brightwood saplings had brought all kinds of terrors to her mind the night she had arrived, echoing the waking nightmares she had experienced crossing the Greatlands. It was fine later, when the Citadel was empty. Somehow the brightwood flowers didn't bother her then, but when the crowds had gathered there on their arrival, it had set her senses on edge. There'd been too many creatures in that place, too many nightmares along with them.
She didn't want to feel that way again. What she wanted was another taste of the wonder she had experienced the previous night with the Green Masons of the Tree Wall, singing psalms until the stars shone bright in the sky above her. The half-leaf rhododendron heart, as strong as rock and stone, will keep the gentle sapling safe when hardest winds are blown. So take your heart to safer ground when you are far from home. None of her brother's foxes had been with her last night. The ones who had followed her with Dewdrop had left with her father to return to Applewood. "I have another idea," she signed to the grey-headed fox. "We will go north along the tree wall. Come, Rockhart, I will introduce you to some of our new friends." She led the small group of foxes away from the green gate and along the inner edge of the tree wall, where the solid mesh was separated from the bloodwood proper by a gap of 10 to 20 heartbeats. It was an exposed space where any creature that had somehow slipped through the protective ring could easily be noticed before it had a chance to disappear into the forest. Even if animals slipped by unseen and unheard, they would leave clear scent marks across the barren ground, giving away numbers, health, and even an emotional impression of their intentions if they happened to be foolish enough to make water by the tree line. Hartford felt the unease of her foxes to be exposed like this, travelling in an open space where any watcher from the forest could see them. It reminded them too readily of the unease of their journey across the Greatlands. Rockhart suggested that they move into the tree line, but Hartford was not sure she could find the right scent paths back to that portion of the tree wall if they re-entered the forest, and she was unsure of the name of the place, even if they were to ask any Highwood creature to act as their guide, or even if the place had any name at all. The king's daughter may have simply led her to a random spot, rather than one well-known to hindmarked creatures, but she knew it had been close to the Evenside Green Gate, so it couldn't be far. She had little choice but to lead the group onward until she found something familiar on her scentscape. The shadow of Cold Mountain had retreated far enough to allow the sun to touch the uppermost leaves of the tree wall. Golden buds of new leaves sparkled like fireflies above their heads. Hartford insisted Rockhart walk alongside her, close enough to easily share a few rudimentary pictures with each other as the rest of the small posse followed a few heartbeats behind them. Sharing her thoughts with Rockhart was difficult. The two did not know each other well to begin with, and the grey-headed fox had a very rigid understanding of how animals of different ranks should communicate. Hartford shared images of Applewood to inquire about the fox's family, pictures of the Greatlands to find out how she'd managed on the long journey, but the heartmarked thing could only return dull and factual responses rather than anything that might lead to a more intimate acquaintance. Neither of them were comfortable in their sharing, and after a while Hartford stemmed the flow of pictures. Rockhart was more interested in the evaluation of possible dangers from the tree line than any discussion of their past lives before coming to Highwood. Here and there among the branches was the scent of stoat and squirrel, as well as the numerous other species that tended the tree wall. Most of them were entirely new to Hartford, evidence of the many creatures it took to maintain the Bloodwood's mighty border, but eventually the scentscape began to reveal more familiar traces among the unknown. Individual scents could be picked out from the cacophony, some of which Hartford recognised from the night before. The trees, too, began to feel more like the memory she had of the place. "We are here," she signed. Rockhart stayed back with the rest of the small pack as Hartford made her way deliberately to the base of the tree wall and did her best to bark out the demand for attention she had heard Dewdrop use the day before. The sound came out mangled somewhat. In time, she would get used to the particular accent of calls used in the King's Bloodwood, as no doubt Dewdrop had to learn them when the deer first followed her father to Highwood. But for now, Harfoot's attempt seemed to work. Within a few heartbeats, the scent of the weasel who had taught her Cold Morning's Blooming Psalm appeared just upwind of her. A few heartbeats more and he emerged from the lower branches and shimmered down the tree wall and skipped over. He held his paw against his mark and glowed with excitement.
"The daughter of Applewood," he sighed. "You have come back so soon."
"Buckwillow," she signed, returning his greeting and gesturing to her retinue. "I've brought friends." The weasel looked around as if expecting some other high-marked creature to emerge from the forest. His eyes moved past the foxes as though they were not there. The foxes similarly looked uncertain of how they should respond. Should they slip back to the cover of the tree line, or make themselves known to this hind-marked creature of another bloodwood? Eventually, Rockhart stood forward, paw to her mark, and addressed the Green Mason awkwardly.
Your tree wall is strong, she sighed. It has many close branches. I wonder if there has ever been an animal to breach it.
The weasel shook away the suggestion.
Never,
he sighed, confident.
Not for generations.
There was the king, sighed Harford. He must have found a way through, and the stag's war was barely a year ago.
No,
sighed the weasel proudly.
Not even then.
But then how did his forces enter the bloodwood? The weasel froze at the question for a few heartbeats, then looked between the two of them, fumbling for sign words.
Perhaps you've come for some more songs.
Harford took note of the distraction. Indeed, she sighed. I was hoping I might meet with some of the same creatures as last night. Flakefoot and Snowtip seemed particularly knowledgeable. Underleaf also, if she's here.
Ah, of course,
sighed the weasel, touching his mark. Harford dismissed him, and he skittered along the base of the tree wall, chirping loudly into the root pits to summon forth his Green Masons. Harford turned to Rockhart. Do you think I insulted him?
It was not that, sighed the grey-headed fox. He was right, what he said about the tree wall never being breached.
Well, the Threehorn found a way through.
You are thinking of the Stag's Rising, sighed Rockhart.
Do you know a different song?
The Stag's Rising is the official account of that day, she admitted.
That is what the songwrites of Highwood sent out to the other Bloodwoods, but there are other songs. Your brother knew some of them.
And what did these other songs say?
When the king's father, Brighthoof, led Southwood's forces against Highwood, the tree wall held firm. It was the Great Bear's decision to leave the protection of the trees to meet him, and so Greypaw killed Brighthoof, and the Threehorn killed Greypaw in revenge. But the Threehorn did not have to force his way into the Bloodwood to claim it. Once the Great Bear was dead, the green gates were open to the invading army. The Threehorn led his father's forces straight through and onto the Blood Oak without resistance. Highwood forgot its duty that day. When a king dies, their eldest child becomes king in their place. When the Great Bear died, his son became king. That is the way it has been since the gods stopped walking. Yet Highwood opened its green gates to the very enemy it was supposed to resist. While the Threehorn walked through the Bloodwood and into the Citadel, right up to that moment he tore the bark of the Blood Oak and pressed his crown against the wound, Highwood still had a king, Greypaw's son. The king it sent running to the frozen lands of the north, driving him and his mother into exile when they should have stood shoulder to shoulder to protect them. The fox sighed gently, all too aware of how easy it would be for other eyes to see their conversation. It was the most she had shared with Harford all morning.
No, the tree wall has never been breached, she continued. Not properly. I dare say Greypaw would still be king today if he had been able to swallow his pride and stay within the walls.
Harford gazed up at the enormous mass of solid wood before her. It did seem impossible that any creature could force its way through that tangle. The branches had been delicately woven across generations, smooth on the outside and shaped to prevent anything from climbing over. The roots below the ground were similarly enmeshed to disallow tunnelling from beneath. The only other possibility was the outright destruction of the wall itself, yet the trunks remained uniform as snow on Cold Mountain. The only way the Threehorn could have made it past Highwood's border was if the creatures of Highwood had betrayed their new cub of a king and let the stag through themselves. Harford shared an image of pride, then shifted it briefly to the scent of shame. Rockhart hummed in agreement. We'd be wise to focus on the former, she sighed. The other foxes, who had journeyed with them, were taking shelter in the shadow of the tree line. Harford could tell that Rockhart wanted to join them, but she had already introduced her to their host, thereby demanding she remain. She wondered if this would work. If the foxes were to be her guards for a time in Highwood, they would need to get along. But these were her brother's foxes, first and foremost. Breakcover was not famed for his interest in green masonry. His chosen companions would share his affection for the hunt, not for flowers. It was more likely these foxes would have chased down this green mason if his blood mark were not so clearly stamped on his hide. Buck Willow was hopping back from the tree wall, followed by the squirrel Flakefoot and the hedgehog Underleaf, scurrying to keep up. Harfoot remembered them both by sight, even before she found them on her scentscape. Harfoot looked around for the pine marten called Snowtip, who had particularly impressed her with his knowledge about the soil of Highwood. He was nowhere to be seen. In his place, Buck Willow was trailed by an energetic little ermine, with dark brown fur and a grey, almost blue, path of fur dripping from its mouth. It was a shame, thought Harfoot. Snowtip had been the one she'd really wanted to see. He was older than the rest, with several different songs to answer every one of her questions from Highwood and beyond. She had little hope this ermine would be of the same standard. Ermines were short-lived, often just a few years. Even the hedgehog waddling closer was likely to live longer. Such a short life was unlikely to hold such a wealth of experience as the pine marten she had met. The heart-marked weasel lined up his green masons.
"Flakefoot and Underleaf, you already know," he sighed.
The green masons touched their marks as their names were signed.
"This stoat is Blue Tongue," he continued.
Ermine, corrected Harfoot.
"Ermine?
That's right, isn't it?" The small creature looked between his heart and the head-marked fox, unsure for a moment where his allegiance lay.
"Highwood is warm even through winter," he signed after a heartbeat. "It's rarely cold enough for my fur to turn white."
Buck Willow grunted disapproval, which quickly changed into a hum of appreciation once he saw the fox tip her head in respect.
"Blue Tongue is one of our finest rootsmiths," he sighed. "He is apprenticed by Snowtip, who you will remember from the last time you were here, pine marten dash of white at both ends, very good with the soil."
"I remember," sighed Harford, sharing a gentle image of the dance they had performed together. "And where is your master today, Blue Tongue? I'd hoped he could remind me of some of the steps of Hazelbrook's healing he was kind enough to show me yesterday. I'm afraid I have been distracted and cannot recall the middle two verses. Something about taking lake water at night?"
"At the lake with moonlight skimming, when the algae blooms are dimming. I know Hazelbrook's healing,"
signed the ermine with a grace that took Harfoot somewhat by surprise.
"It works on alder and birch that have blackroot or wet rot. Willow also, though, not as effectively. I'd probably recommend Tulip's biting psalm for that. It's similar, but a little more physical in its approach. I can show you the steps." "As you can see," signed Buck Willow, "Snowtip has him well trained. I'm sure you'll be able to make good use of him."
Harford beckoned over Rockheart and the other foxes. They slipped from the cover of the trees reluctantly, pattering over the open space between forest and tree wall as though they had been caught in the rain. Harfoot wondered if she was doing the right thing in inviting them to join in. Every animal could dance, but the psalms of the Green Masons had their own unique style, and were not danced like God's Song or the songs of yesterday favoured by most fighting creatures. The psalms of Applewood were rarely seen in her father's court, and from what she had seen the last time she was with these Green Masons at the Tree Hall, Highwood's psalms were even more formal and rigid. If the creatures were not interested in the actual content of the songs, they were unlikely to take much pleasure from the steps themselves. But still, it was important to bond with her foxes. And they were at the tree wall right here and now, so this was their best opportunity to begin, no matter how reluctant they might appear at first. They'd soon get into it, and there'd be plenty of time for other dances later on, when they'd return to their dell and their duties at the Citadel. "Maybe we begin with Hazelbrook's healing and go from there," she signed once they'd gathered. The ermine took the lead, and the others followed his steps, their eyes fixed on him like leaves to the sun. Harfoot longed to join in, and it was all she could do to keep her paws grounded in front of her. It would have been a step too far for her companions. The other foxes stood there, rigid and alert, as the smaller creatures twisted and sidestepped before them. More than once, the hedgehog glanced over the audience warily and lost its footing, falling out of step with the ermine's dance. Like most hedgehogs, its blood mark was on its soft underside, to save the king with the unpleasant duty of holding his print against their spines. It would have to suppress its natural instincts to curl up in the face of danger in order to expose its delicate underside to any would-be assailants. Harfoot saw it lifted its hind leg much higher than was comfortable to make sure its audience could see the smudge of sap coating its lower half. She felt pity for the poor thing. She had never personally known a hedgehog with a mark any higher than that of a hind mark on its underside. In a way, she supposed it was a physical impossibility. Its heights were set the moment it was born, limited by the size of its own belly. How horrible to be limited so unfairly by your own body in such a way. She looked down at her own torn feet. The skin on her left was particularly tender from where it had been chewed at the blooming of the brightwood flowers. Was she limited as the hedgehog was? She didn't feel she was. She was a daughter of Applewood and its high-marked representative to the king. There were few who could ascend above her. But this hedgehog was clearly no high-born creature. He would have been born into a family of hind-marked creatures, grateful for their stain and without ambition of obtaining any higher. That was the way of things. Why aspire to what you could never achieve? And yet, something drew her to the spiky little green mason. They shared something, she felt, even if she couldn't name what that thing was. Maybe it was the way the world looked at them both, inspected them, judged their worth based on their bodies rather than their ability. This creature would never rise above its hindmarked status, no matter how hard it worked. It would always be how it was now. That didn't seem fair. It wasn't right. It shouldn't be. And suddenly she found she didn't want to join in with their dance. She wanted it to stop. She wanted to spare this creature from the glare of teeth and fangs that loomed over it, disinterested except for what its broken body might offer them in terms of sustenance. There was knowledge in the dance. There was beauty in it. This creature's signed words held the secrets of life and death, root and stem, that wove the trees into forms that would outlast any creature they're watching. One day, all their bones would crumble into soil, no longer on the scentscape, no longer a guide to any traveller on the Bloodwood scent paths, and still, even then, the structures these green masons had built would remain standing, protecting, nourishing those who would come after. A new day dawned on her mind. Yes, she was Applewood's headmarked, but she could do so much more than just that. So little consideration was given to these green masons. Their fates were sealed the moment they were born. They could be ignored and used, but they would never be given the respect they deserved to what they had given the Bloodwood. They grew structures that outlasted dynasties. Kings could come and go. One day the three-horned stag would die and his daughter, Dewdrop, would become king in his place. And one day the same thing would happen to her and her own firstborn would lead the Bloodwoods. But in all that time, the citadel and the tree wall and everything else these humble creatures maintained would stand strong as the Bloodwood tree itself. The kingdom was ruled by the king, but it was built by the Green Masons. Purpose rose in Halffoot like the sun. This is what she would do. This is the real reason the gods had chosen her to remain in Highwood. She would not only represent her father to the king, she would represent all the small creatures whose only audience with the three-horn was those few heartbeats when they pledged their loyalty in return for his mark upon their skin. They never got to sign with him beyond reciting the words of the ritual that earned them the right to carry his blood mark. She would sign on their behalf. She would carry their pictures to the king. If Applewood and Highwood could grow stronger by growing together, then how much stronger could a Bloodwood grow if its citizens were bound to each other in the same way? The revelation sent shivers across her body like ice falling into water. Rockhart noticed. She leaned in close and signed softly. A dream. Halffoot shook her head. Something else, she signed. It didn't surprise her that her brother's foxes knew about her dreams. They'd crossed the Greatlands together after all. Even if they were polite enough to ignore her reputation in Applewood, the days they'd spent travelling over that haunted grassland meant that little could be hidden. Her dreams had never been as vivid as they had that night that they'd stayed in Smallwood. On the Greatlands, the line between the waking and sleeping worlds had blurred and broken. Dreams seeped through her thoughts without her ever having to close her eyes. There was no way the hindmarked creatures guarding them would not have noticed. She knew they signed with each other when their duties allowed, shared pictures as they swapped shifts. Those who saw her wandering while the rest of the family slept would have told the others. There can be no secrets on the scent path between Bloodwoods. Rockhart was on the alert. Already she was signing to two of the other foxes, sending them to scout the scentscape for whatever might be triggering the headmarked fox's heightened senses. They trusted her for that, at least. Even if they thought her mad, they did not doubt her intuition. The orange fox with the black face had taken up positions close quarters to the dancers, its sudden movement disturbing the rhythm of their psalm. The hedgehog was doing all it could to avoid curling into a ball. It stopped dancing and lifted its leg to fully expose its blood mark, its head ducking down beneath its front legs in fear. Harfoot barked for the attention of the foxes. "Rockhart, stop. This is not necessary." "What is it you sensed?" asked the grey-headed fox. She was signing for the last of the foxes to move to the back of the group to scout along the forest. "Nothing," signed Harfoot. "It was an idea. No danger. I was just thinking." Rockhart came up closer to her. "Was it one of the hindmarked ones? If you suspect something..." "It was not one of the hindmarked," interrupted Harfoot. "And I suspect nothing. It's safe here. These are our friends." Rockhart did not look convinced. The Green Masons had all stopped their recital. Buckwillow took a step closer, but dared not come too near the sharp-toothed guests.
"We can try another song, if this is not to your liking."
Rockhart and the other foxes ignored the weasel. Harford pressed her paw against her mark. "Forgive us. The forest is full of strange noises, and we are just taking some time to adjust." She barked for attention again. The foxes turned to her. "There is no enemy in the shadows," she signed. "Our hosts offer us songs, not teeth. We should not abuse their hospitality." The foxes did not move from their positions. "Rockhart," signed Harford. "I appreciate your concern, but we are safe here." The grey-headed fox grunted uneasily. "Of course," she signed. "I meant no insult."
"Nan has been taken,"
signed Buckwillow. Still, the foxes did not move. This was not going as planned. Harford wanted to share this part of herself with them, to show the beauty of the world as she saw it, but her brother's creatures were not interested in sap and stem. They had humoured her long enough, and even just her shiver was enough to send them scuttling back into the rigidity of their training. "Take up positions in the tree line," signed Harford, giving in. "Send a scout into the bracken to the north and another to the south. Make sure we know all that moves in the shadows." Rockhart relaxed at once, happy that they were finally doing something sensible. She gave orders to the others, who quickly vanished into the tree line.
"I will stay to watch the show," signed the grey-headed fox.
"No," signed Harford. "Give me your eyes in the forest. Report back if you find anything. I will tell you when it is time to leave." Rockhart touched her mark and trotted over to the trees, more relaxed than she'd been all morning. The Green Masons watched her go.
"I hope we did not bore your companions," signed Buckwillow.
"Not at all," signed Harford, "but I must allow them to do their duty. It was wrong of me to take that away from them."
"There is joy in doing something well,"
signed the weasel. "And also in receiving someone else's service. You're generous with your songs."
"We are only too happy to help. It is an honour to dance for a headmarked animal such as yourself. An uncommon pleasure, I'm afraid to say. These songs are rarely danced in court. Never in my lifetime. Normally it is only the master and the apprentice who dance them. Beyond that, the Bloodwood has little interest in our humble craft."
"Well, they should have an interest," signed the fox. "It's the psalms of the Green Masons that keep our Bloodwood strong. This tree wall would either fall or grow so far out of shape that it would become useless within a generation if it were not for you." The small collection of creatures before her tittered excitedly at her compliment. "Blue Tongue," she sighed. "You danced beautifully. Thank you." The young ermine touched his mark in appreciation. "Rockhart says you are training under Snowtip?"
"I am."
"I was impressed with him when I was here before. He not only knew Highwood's songs, but also many from Applewood. He made me feel right at home."
"He is one of our best,"
signed Buckwillow, eager to remain the centre of his guests' attention.
"He has travelled far across the kingdom, learning from the Green Masons of other Bloodwoods." "He knows psalms from across Southwood and Saltwood,"
signed Blue Tongue. "Saltwood? I hope to go there myself one day."
"As do I."
"The Bloodwood at the edge of the world," she sighed. "They say the sea whispers its secrets to the trees that grow there. Those who taste its fruit sing more wonders than the rest of the kingdom combined. Is that where Snowtip learned to dance?"
"I do not know,"
sighed the ermine.
"Maybe."
"Well, Maybe we can ask him. The ermine nodded. Harford waited. Well, go fetch him, she signed after a few heartbeats. Blue Tongue glanced uncomfortably at Buck Willow.
I'm afraid I do not know where he is, he signed.
Harford grunted, disappointed. An apprentice should always know where his master is, she signed.
He went to inspect the brightwood saplings, he added.
The bear, a hole where his eyes should be, blood on his fur.
The vision passed over Harford like a shadow. She stiffened against it. That's a long way to go, she signed, trying to ignore the scent of the nightmare. Maybe I shall be fortunate enough to meet him on the scent path. I will have to return there at some point. How long until he returns?
He should have been back at first light, sighed the ermine. He took the river path.
There was a ripple of discomfort among the other animals. What is the river path?
It is the fastest route to the citadel, signed Buck Willow. I would not advise taking it. The blue stalk walk is far nicer. There are still bluebells in flower that way.
Oh, I've seen plenty of bluebells. Applewood's full of them. Our herbrites use their roots as mulch for the apple seedlings. No, I think I'll take this river path. It'd be nice to meet Snowtip again, if the gods allow.
My lord of Applewood, signed Buck Willow. I really think the blue stalk walk is the better choice.
The other green masons agreed, except for Blue Tongue. It hung his head low and did not see the weasel's sign words. For the first time, she noticed something different about his scent. Worry tainted the smell of him. Some rumbling panic that set his heart beating faster than it should be. Harford chirped for his attention. Would you take this river path? Your master Snowtip seems happy enough to follow it.
My lord,
began Buck Willow, but Harford did not let him finish. I did not make my sign words for you, she snapped. I signed for Blue Tongue.
I would not take the river path, sighed the ermine.
And why is that?
It's a drab scent path, interjected Buck Willow. There's nothing of interest that way.
Interrupt me again, weasel, and I'll have my foxes drive you into the river. Buck Willow shrank away. Harford turned back to the ermine. Now, tell me, why would you not take the river path? The creature looked as though it was ready to turn and run. The rest of them were the same. Underleaf the hedgehog had entirely abandoned its attempt to display its blood mark and was now curled in a tight ball. Maybe Harford was being too harsh. Maybe she was outworking some of her grief at being left behind by her family. She should not take out her emotions on these green masons. They had accepted her unannounced visit with grace, abandoning their duties and dancing these songs closest to their hearts for her amusement alone. She was wrong to lash out like this. She resolved to calm herself. Forgive me, she sighed. It's been a difficult morning. The hedgehog eased its nose out of its ball, but retreated the moment it caught her scent right next to it. We are new to your bloodwood, she sighed. You understand that we do not yet know which scent path to take and which to avoid. If there is some danger on this river path, I only wish to know in order to keep my hindbark creatures safe.
Of course, sighed Buck Willow, shaking a little. We completely understand.
So what is it about this river path? Buck Willow did not answer. He stood there, shuffling on his feet, unable to sign. Harford turned to Blue Tongue and chirped gently for his attention. The ermine considered the situation carefully, working out how best to placate this fox who had demanded so much of its time already that morning.
There are rumours, he signed.
Of what?
River folk.
River folk? I thought the great bear had purged the forest of their kind years ago.
He did, signed Blue Tongue. But some say they have returned.
Why did they say that?
The ermine stumbled for his words. There have been animals who have gone missing.
By the river?
They are only rumours, he sighed.
But your master has not yet returned, and he took the river path?
He may just be late. He has some arthritis. Ginger normally helps, but I didn't give him enough this time.
Where did you get ginger from?
Asked Buck Willow. Blue Tongue gave him no answer. So you think the river folk may have taken him? Signed Harford.
He's not normally late,
signed Blue Tongue, clearly upset. Harford hummed a sound of certainty. The river folk pose a danger to those who take the river path, she sighed.
Only if they've returned. I'm not saying they have, but they've never been friends to any Bloodwood. They strip the trees of their marks. They rip them right out of the trunks all along the river bank. They leave the trees to die.
And kill any who try to stop them,
added Buck Willow before catching himself.
Though these are, of course, rumours. I'm sure there's no truth to them. We know the king does all he can to keep the Bloodwood safe.
Ah, thought Harford. So this is why they are so wary. They fear I will tell the king they have no faith in his ability to protect Highwood from his old enemies. The three-horned stag is vigilant indeed, she sighed. I've only met him once, but I can see the faith you have in him is well-founded, but I must ask, does he know of these rumours?
I don't know, sighed Buck Willow. I'm sure the shoulders of the king would keep him well informed.
Harford was not so certain. He should know, she sighed, already preparing herself for action. It was a strong feeling, warm like the glow of summer sun. There were songs of yesterday that told of great hordes flowing out from the rivers to fight against the Bloodwood lords of the past, but these were only stories reaching back almost as far as when the gods were walking. Harford had never heard of any horde of any kind in her lifetime, nor the lifetime of her father or her father's father. The river folk had learned long ago not to fight against their land-dwelling neighbours. They were outmatched in both numbers and military coordination, and every mink or otter swam the kingdom's rivers alone. They would stand no chance if they crept from the protection of the water. But still, if the river folk had returned to Highwood and were picking off hindmarked creatures, then this was exactly the sort of thing a headmarked representative of Applewood would bring to the king. Harford wanted to act as their voice to the king, didn't she? Well, this was her first chance. The king would be pleased. The river folk were assaulting his own green masons, the very creatures who kept his Bloodwood safe behind its tree wall. And here was she, coming to their aid. It would be a first act of binding, an act to bring Applewood and Highwood close together by uniting them against a common foe. This was exactly the sort of thing her father wanted her to do, to see things a different way in order to help them grow stronger together. "I will take the river path to the citadel," she announced.
"My lord, please,"
Buckwood fumbled, paws catching on each other as he tried to find the words in his practical vocabulary that might persuade a high-marked creature like herself to change its mind. It was a fruitless effort. "Fear not, Buck Willow," soothed Harford. "I will have my foxes with me. River folk have no marks, no order to their attacks, no high-marked leader to coordinate their decisions. Even if they pick off a high-marked creature here and there, they would not dare attack a guard full of foxes. I promise you, I will be safe. But I should inspect the banks for myself before I go to the king. If the river folk have indeed returned to the Bloodwood, we will find the trees they have wounded. There may be a chance that we could save a few of them, if we are quick enough to treat them before an infection sets in. Blue Tongue, Underleaf, Buck Willow, and, Flakeford," sighed the squirrel. "Flakeford, yes, will you accompany me? We need guides, and your knowledge of green masonry could save many trees along the way." The creatures looked unsure of themselves. Harford wondered if she was asking too much of them. Perhaps there was a reason why they could not leave the tree wall. Maybe their marks depended on their continued presence along the expanse of woven wood. Or maybe they were afraid of the river. River folk or none, if one of the green masons fell in, the water would wash their blood marks clean off them, leaving them unprotected by the law of the Bloodwood. Blue Tongue chirped gently.
"I will come," he signed.
Harford held her paw to her mark, grateful. She turned and signalled to Rockhart in the shadows of the tree line, telling her to gather the other foxes. So this was what she was meant to do. She felt the glow of her father's blessing upon her mark, her brother's too. She felt their paws against the sacred sap, urging her on, readying her to show the world what she could do. The other green masons held their heads low. Buck Willow twitched nervously, unsure of what to say. The hedgehog remained tightly curled. "Well," sighed Harford, turning to the young ermine playfully, "take me to the river." You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. To learn more, visit olliefrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, May the gods always hear your song.